Hi, this is Leslie Samuels Healy, and I was born in New York City, and in February of 1964, the tender age of 14, I was lucky enough to be in the audience of the Ed Sullivan Show, and that was the day that the Beatles were there on their first ever appearance, and I was hooked for life.
Yeah, that's great.
So let's talk about the experience of, growing up with the Beatles through their changes. We started talking about this when I asked you to remember Revolver, and I'm wondering then, you know, if you could tell me how through 1966 and 1967 the Beatles were striking you as they went through their changes. So, you know, something that takes you out of Rubber Soul and not detail on Revolver, but using Revolver as kind of a bridge to Pepper.
I was thinking of that actually, Paul, when I was just, you know, going in my head and going back in time. And if you just look at the albums where you have Rubber Soul, where the picture was just a very plain, nice picture of the Beatles, then you go into Revolver in 66, where you could see they were growing and their minds were expanding, and just not only the sounds of the music, but the look of the album was completely avant-garde. And then you come out in 1967, it's coming into the Summer of Love, and the Beatles brought out Sgt. Pepper, which I guess everyone is saying is their alter ego. And the album, visually, was just mind-blowing. There was so much going on. And at first thought, when I looked at it, it was like, this is the end of the Beatles. They're burying themselves. And it was very sad. Then you got into the music, and of course the music was much, much different, going in different directions, but they were very unified. It was a tremendous album.
Mm-hmm. So you were old enough maybe then to remember like the process of going out and buying the album and either and listening to it for the first time or sharing it with friends. What do you remember about that? Is there something there?
Oh, yeah. I have such a vivid recollection of hearing Sgt. Pepper for the first time. I just got my driver's license, and I was picking up my mom downtown on an afternoon, and on, I think it was WMCA radio in New York, first and exclusive, we have the new Sgt. Pepper album. And so I'm just trying to drive, but listening much more intently, and I picked up my mom. I said, be quiet, don't say a word, I will drive safely, but I'm listening to this. If you're not comfortable, take a cab, I'll get home. It was quite funny, but I mean, it was just incredible hearing it for the first time. And of course, then when we got to buy the album and study it and look at it and play with all the funny little inserts, it was a pretty cool experience. It was so different than anything else that had come out.
Yeah, so tell me more about, you know, where did you buy your records?
Wow. This is going back a long time. A couple of my friends, we all would meet downtown at Sam Goody's record store. And that was downtown somewhere in the 40s on the west side in New York City. And the reason we were down there is because it was Tin Pan Alley, and occasionally somebody famous would walk in. So I remember we would be hanging at Sam Goody's, but that's where we went down to buy our records. It was so different purchasing, you know, a lot of things way back in the 60s. You didn't have internet shopping. You know, a record store was where you bought records. We didn't have, like, Walmart all over the place, especially right in New York City.
So you brought it home, and can you just, not necessarily that first time, but, you know, just remember having it, you know, for the first, you know, few weeks or something, how would you interact with a new Beatles album, and particularly Sgt. Pepper?
I probably wore it out side at a time. Mm-hmm. We had the record player where you left the arm up and it would repeat itself, and it would repeat itself, and it would repeat itself, and indeed you assimilated that music, so it was part of you.
So what other impressions do you remember, or even as you're looking at the album today, you know, would you just sit and gaze at that group of people and read the lyrics? I mean, the lyrics was a new deal for the Beatles then, too.
Yeah, I believe this was the first album that was like a book that you could open it up, you know, that had the two sides on it. And later, I think, I found out that originally Sgt. Pepper was supposed to be two albums, but by the time they got out of the studio, they only had enough music for one album. So that's why they had the two sides. They'd already done the album jacket, hoping to have two discs.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. So as you look at the album today, you know, and start this answer with saying, you know, I'm holding, you know, original copy that I picked up in London, but, you know, just pick out things that still, you know, have always fascinated you, or the faces that jump out, or, you know, the impressions that you got from that piece of art, actually.
Well, I'm holding my Sgt. Pepper's album that I brought back with me from England, and it still has tremendous impact because there's so much going on. What's interesting, you have two sets of Beatles. You have the Madame Tussauds wax Beatles, which was from about 1964 era, and then you have the actual Beatles circa 1967 standing right in the middle with their Sgt. Pepper look and Sgt. Pepper instruments. And then they're overlooking his graveside, where the flowers are spelling out Beatles and the yellow flowers, guitar. And they're surrounded by their friends and heroes, and it's such a mix of people. It's incredible. Some of the folks that stand out, obviously you have musicians. You have Bob Dylan. You have Stuart Sutcliffe on there, who was one of John's very, very good art friends, and indeed played with the Beatles in Germany before he passed away. You have people like Sonny Liston on the cover. You have two Shirley Temples. You have a picture of her, and you also have a doll, Shirley Temple, who's wearing a Rolling Stone sweatshirt. Some things, total juxtaposition for an album. You have a little figure of Snow White, and then you have a hookah, which is your tobacco pipe, I guess for marijuana or for whatever you may use things like that for. It was just a tremendous mix of their people. And, of course, you have the musical instruments and just a lot going on.
Why don't you, you know, roll through it and pick out maybe four tunes that even still today have some, you know, really strong resonance for you, and, you know, talk about the lyrics and the music as you remember it and hear it still today, you know, elements that stand out like we did with Revolver.
There's a lot of songs that absolutely impact me in different ways from Sgt. Pepper. One of the songs that stay with me, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, just for the word pictures. It has so much to say for just a little dream song. Of course, everybody was saying it's talking about LSD, but John picked the words out from a picture from his son Julian. And you can just close your eyes and hear that dreamy music and just sort of escape. See the newspaper taxis on the shore waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your heads in the cloud and you're gone. And you can just escape with that. And that was a tremendous sound. She's Leaving Home, I think, was almost a mantra for me, because I knew before Pepper came out that I would be leaving New York and going to England right at the end of June of 67. And when She's Leaving Home, the words, you know, all of a sudden somebody else was leaving home and I had a partner in crime here, and that was something I could just hold on to. And I think that was very powerful for me, though I didn't sneak away silently closing my bedroom door, leaving the note. I didn't do any of that. Everybody knew I was leaving. But it was just very, very strong and powerful for me whenever I hear those notes on the harp coming into it for She's Leaving Home. Smile. I can't believe I actually did some of the things I did when I was younger.
And you had made a decision. Well, tell me about when you made the decision to go to England, and whether it was primarily Beatles-driven or not.
I made my decision to go to England 100% because I wanted to meet the Beatles. I don't know how I realized I would actually accomplish that. I guess growing up in New York, either you think you can do things and you survive, or you get stepped over and it doesn't happen. And I was a survivor. So I had planned everything very carefully. Probably about January that year, I knew I'd be graduating high school. And I worked a part-time job. I saved every penny I could and was able to go. And again, I left the week after I graduated high school. I disappeared and went to London.
What did your parents think about your plan?
Well, do you know, I asked my folks about 15 years ago, you must have been horrified that I was leaving. And truthfully, they said, no, you were a hard child. We were relieved when you left. I cannot believe they said that. But I smiled, and it was okay. I've made peace with that. So I at least I didn't worry them to death.
Mm-hmm. And then when you got to London, I want to just talk a little bit about this, but you know, most of the commentators I've talked with have pointed to the Beatles in Pepper especially, really kind of reflecting the flavor of swinging London 1967. Did it jump out at you in ways that you might have expected in terms of what it felt like, what it looked like, and how did it seem to you?
When I got to London in the summer of 67, that was when London was just beginning to swing, and you had all the Carnaby Street and the mods and the rockers, and it was a really exciting time to be over there. New York was a little bit behind London at the time, and of course, following the Beatles, you just were sort of coming into that era and following what they were doing and wearing tie-dye, and you know, girls grew their hair long and had it straight, and guys were growing their hair long and you know, getting facial hair. And it was just a much, much more free society. We were breaking out. It was our generation coming of age.
And then without the one-by-one detail, you did by means of just sort of hanging out near their homes, you did manage to meet each of them one-on-one in a period of, what, a few weeks?
Just for background, what I did to pacify, I think, my folks, I went for a summer with an organized study group, okay, put study group in quotes, and I knew once I arrived and, you know, got settled, my next day I would go and meet the Beatles. So the first day I went into London and met Paul, and then I went the next day, I believe, to George and John and Ringo. Literally, as you say, we just hung. Here is the power of a written note. When I went to Paul's house on Cavendish, They were having some work done, electrical work in the house. Of course, there's big gates, you can't just walk in. And I had flowers with me as a gift, because this is flower power, you know, summer of love. And I wrote a note saying, I'm Leslie Samuels, I have some presents for Paul, I'm the head of one of their fan clubs in New York. I gave this note with the flowers to one of the electricians walking in, and about 5 minutes later, Paul's housekeeper came out and said, okay, which of you is Leslie? Come on in. That's how I got into Paul. Stayed probably about 45 minutes visiting with Paul in his garden. And from there, you know, found the bus to Esher, where George lived. And from Esher, the next bus into Weybridge, where John and Ringo lived. And I don't know before internet how everybody knew things, but everybody knew their addresses. Everybody knew how to get there. It was just, you know, a terrific network through some of the Beatles fan clubs and other keen fans who had done this before and spread the word how to get where you want to go.
And were you among many people who were kind of hanging out in these places at that time?
Do you know, this is really funny, but there wasn't tons of folks hanging around at the time. Paul's house always had more fans around because, of course, he was in central London. And when you say many, from as few as four or five to maybe a dozen folks would be around Paul's house at, you know, most nice afternoons or nice mornings. But there wasn't anybody. Every time we went out into Esher or Weybridge, there was never any other fans out there.
So which of the visits with the four do you feel most warmly about or seem most interactive or, you know?
That's such a hard question because I had really good visits with all of them.
No, that's nice.
Paul was so warm and invited myself and my girlfriend Donna, who was with me, into his yard, and we sat and visited, as I said, and I'd had a lot of presents from other kids in New York, my friends, who knew I would get there. So we had all these, you know, silly little things and notes, and please get an autograph to Susie and to Joanne, and of course I did all of that. And Paul was absolutely wonderful, and at the time I was able to ask a lot of questions about some of their music and everything else, and that was a great experience. George was also warm and friendly. He was very welcome, very open. Visited with him a number of times. George was my favorite Beatle when I was growing up, and so I just had a great connection there. Something that was really, really cool, one day we were at George's house, and he was munching marshmallows, and she says, "Newspaper people eat marshmallow pies. Want a marshmallow?" Of course you want a marshmallow, from George Harrison. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool, Paul.
So thanks for that, and let me steer back to the record, because we got you to Leaving Home, and I just wanted to hear about it then. But let's pick another couple of songs that really resonate with you.
A Day in the Life was incredible, because looking back now, how they only had 4-track tape recorders, how to build all the songs and build the layers of sound. Was wonderful. Looking back, I believe there were 40 orchestra members, which they taped for that final big chord at the end, and they just taped that and made more tracks. So at the end, there was like 160 musicians playing on this big note that rose up. But A Day in the Life was pretty interesting, because I think that it was written because there was an article in the newspaper about someone dying who was a friend of, I don't know, either the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. And that's where they blew their mind out in the car. They had a car accident. And, you know, the visuals on that, how you could hear what was happening, it was pretty different that someone's telling a story about something as day-to-day as somebody having a car accident. And, of course, that middle bit where woke up, got out of bed, and everybody knows sometimes when you wake up late and you jump out of bed and run a comb across your head and out the door you go. You know, again, that was really cool. Something I was thinking about, that of course I never would have realized 40 years back, something that is so incredible about Sgt. Pepper is it appeals to all three senses. It is so strong visual, not only with the album cover, but with the pictures in the words, the word pictures through all of the songs. Auditory, because the Beatles were experimenting so much with different instruments and tape loops, and, you know, phasing came in, I think, for the first time on Sgt. Pepper. And it even appeals to the senses, because there's so many songs, they're not just love songs, but, like, go back to She's Leaving Home, you know, something I'm sure a mother can really feel. She's leaving home, their kids are leaving. Or I get a little help from my friends. It's just warm and fuzzy. So this album really is appealing to everyone. It touches everyone's hot button.
So it sounds like you're saying it touches emotions beyond the boy meets girl emotions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And to hear a lyric like you said, in A Day in the Life, he blew his mind out in the car. He didn't notice that the light had changed. This sort of narrative, really, even when you include Revolver, you don't, you know, there hasn't been that much of that before. I mean, I think Paul started writing character songs a bit with a Paperback Writer and such, but it still must have felt kind of new for a Beatles fan who probably had grown to expect 90% of their stuff to be about love songs.
The love songs. It was a growing experience. Even George's Within You, Without You was totally different, and it was very unusual because that was one of the first Beatles songs that only had one Beatle on it. And of course, it was new to be introduced to the Indian instruments en masse.
Do you think it was weird at the time?
At the time, it was extremely weird. But you not only get used to it, and I guess it, you know, a touch of meditation in the middle of the album just as a breather from all the other music. It was very well done. Again, to have, when it was on an album before we had CDs, you had two sides of an album. You had to turn your album over, and you started again with something, you know, completely different to give it a break and then come back into the rest of the album.
Mm-hmm. Was it a difficult listen for a while? I mean, difficult, challenging. You know, did you have the experience of saying, I don't know if I like this or not, or I like this a little bit more than that? And how do you remember kind of the overall early experience of just hearing the songs?
I think Sgt. Pepper, to me, was my favorite album, always has been since the first time I heard it. So I don't think it was difficult to hear. It was a little bit different in places, but on the whole, you heard each Beatle doing their thing, and that was good, to have them express themselves, do what they wanted to do. And I don't think there was any animosity in Pepper like there was that you could not only hear, but you could see so clearly in the Let It Be album. You know, the Beatles were together, this is their finest moment, and the music shone brightly and will last forever.
And for you, this album, is their penultimate?
This is it. This is the best.
Because of the songs and the whole packaging, or is it mostly a musical evaluation for you?
I think I'm basically an auditory person, so the music is the strongest impact to me. But the whole impact, I think, timing, when it came out, what was in it, and that was my album that I left home and went to England and then was able to realize my dreams and meet these four men. The whole package of that really sort of sets the seal. Sgt. Pepper is my ultimate album. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the finest that the Beatles have ever done. As a matter of fact, for my money, that's the finest rock and roll album, period.
Yeah.